When it comes to government transparency and accountability laws, Michigan ranks last out of all the states. A literal F grade. That's from a report from the Center for Public Integrity. Only two states, one of which is Michigan, fully exempt the executive and legislative branches from Freedom of Information Acts.
48 other states do this. 48 other states are subjected to disclosure of their documents. So we aren't so special and unique here in Michigan that somehow our constituents, our residents, aren't deserving of the same information as residents in other states.
That's Michigan State Senator Jeremy Moss, and I'm Zoe Clark. This is the Stateside Pod. Legislation that would make the state legislature and the governor's office subject to open record laws passed the state house last week. And this is happening in the background of continuing scrutiny of Governor Whitmer's use of a confidentiality agreement with Robert Gordon, a former cabinet head helping to oversee the state's COVID-19 response. Craig Mauger of the Detroit News and Emily Lawler of MLive have both been following these stories out of the state capitol. Hey, you two.
Hey, hello.
Hey, thanks for having us.
So, okay, let's start with the legislation that passed the state house regarding FOIA. It's now before the state Senate. It would open up the governor's office and the legislature. What exactly, like, would these bills do? Would they really help with that F grade?
Yeah, I mean, the bills would change the longstanding fact that we are one of two states that don't subject the governor's office or the legislature to any type of open records request. So in that sense, yes, these bills would change one of the key reasons that we're 50th out of 50 states for disclosure.
Yeah, but I think the question would really be how they're implemented. A lot of people have been calling attention to what seem like some areas of concern or loopholes. And I think that we've seen FOIA over the years become, it can be a great tool for getting information. It can also be sort of a tool to throw blockades in the way, as I know that most reporters have experienced. But broadly, the law would subject the governor's office to the Freedom of Information Act and create a separate new Legislative Open Records Act, or LORA, for the legislative branch.
So, Emily, what exactly, I mean, we throw out these words, FOIA, LORA, open records, but in actual practice, what does that look like, right? What are some files or papers or something right now that is shielded under these laws that suddenly the public, reporters, whomever, would be able to see?
Yeah, well, random example. Let's say that I wanted travel expenses from everyone from my local school board official, which I could get it from under FOIA, to the director of a state department. I could get that under FOIA. I could not get that from the governor's office or the legislature under FOIA. Now, the legislature has some rules where they disclose some sort of broad strokes financial implications under these requests. The governor's office also does some voluntarily, but there's basically no law compelling the executive and legislative branches to give us the same information that we can get under open records laws from local governments or the state government more broadly.
Craig, what does that mean, do you think, for the public to not be able to have this information compared with other states where this is just sort of rightfully known to taxpayers if they ask for it?
Yeah, I mean, it just the public is missing out on a large swath of documents that, lay the foundation for decisions that affect their daily lives. I mean, the legislature and the governor, create the laws that affect all of us on a daily basis. And these records, some of them would not be subjected to this law. Many of them would, but we would get a better understanding under these proposals of what's behind some of the policy changes that are made. An example of a possible request. If there is a bill that's pushed and we know that there's one particular lobbying group pushing that bill in the legislature, potentially we could request the documents of communication between the lawmaker who led the charge for that change and the lobbying entity that wanted the change. I mean, those are the type of records we could get. We could see what type of conversations were happening behind the scenes that led to a reform. And right now we don't get that kind of sunlight on these type of records.
Craig, when you hear from those who aren't in favor of these laws, what are their main talking points? Like, what are the reasons that they give right now for voting against this kind of transparency?
Yeah, so the main pushback that I hear right now is from some lawmakers in the legislature who say, you know, there's a portion of the legislative process that they argue relies on trust and compromise. And if you bring sunlight to all of these documents, does that element of, you know, behind the scenes negotiation somehow get lost? I personally think that there's not a lot to that, because there are many exemptions within these bills that would prevent a lot of that type of conversation from being released. You know, you also hear the main topic of conversation in Lansing on this is how much of the communication between lawmakers and their constituents should be released. And currently this legislation says that communication between lawmakers and constituents is exempt from release under the proposal. So those are probably the two areas that I hear the most discussion and chatter on right now.
Emily, from you, what are you hearing?
Yeah, I mean, I think Craig hit the big ones there. And, you know, I think that it's hard for a public body to open itself up, but you know, you look at the fact that 48 other states are doing this, and it seems like that argument just fades a little bit. And I think that we've seen that over the years, this has gained more support, but I'm not sure if that is going to translate into getting it over the hump finally in the Senate.
So we have lawmakers in the state house pass this last week unanimously, right? It is now in front of the Senate. We've got some bipartisan support in the Senate, but dare I say we've seen this movie before. What is it, four times in the past 5 years this legislation has been passed in the House? The Senate kind of, you know, holds it up. What's the likelihood here of this passing?
I think it's gotten farther this time than in the past, not in the sense that it's passed the House, but that, of course, the Senate has some parallel legislation, and there's going to be a hearing that's expected to take place on that. And, you know, I think that historically, you're right that this is sort of stopped at the Senate's doorstep, and more specifically, the Senate Majority Leader's doorstep, both under former Senate Majority Leader Arlen Meekoff, current Senate Majority Leader, of course, Mike Shirkey. But, you know, the Senate has a bipartisan team championing this. And I think that that could help. I think that Ed McBroom, sort of the Republican half of the bipartisan Senate transparency team, has a lot on his shoulders and has some potential wiggle room to make this so that it's not the whatever number you cited, fifth or sixth time that this stops on the Senate doorstep.
Is some of the issue, too, that it's just like not that sexy of a topic, right? Like, it's not, it's just this, like, we want more information. And it doesn't seem, I was going to say, like redistricting or something like this, or gerrymandering, or, you know, that has sort of gotten attention statewide. Does this subject really have enough attention, sort of mass attention, grassroots attention?
I have not heard gerrymandering described as a sexy topic.
As I was saying that. Welcome to public radio.
There's a lot of attention on this subject right now, and there's a multitude of reasons for why that is. And I think there is probably more inertia behind this at this moment than the last, you know, handful of times that this has stalled in the state Senate. Is it the sexiest topic that's out there right now? Probably not. But there's definitely momentum on the side of this right now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next couple of weeks.
We are going to take a quick break here. More coming up with Capitol reporters Emily Lawler and Craig Mauger. Back in just a minute.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from the University of Michigan's Go Blue Guarantee, committed to keeping a U of M undergraduate education within reach of all Michigan residents, regardless of socioeconomic status. Programs are available for all three campuses. More at goblueguarantee.umich.edu.
So as I mentioned, all of this is happening while this story over Robert Gordon, the former head of the Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, which has had sweeping authority over the COVID-19 response in the state. He resigned in January. There have been a lot of rumors swirling about why he resigned, but no one in the public knows for sure because there was this confidentiality agreement between him and Governor Whitmer with a $155,000 contract. This all sort of feels tied into open government and transparency, or the lack thereof, doesn't it, Craig?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons that this is in the spotlight right now, because we have a concrete example of how disclosure can inform the public and put out information that's not going to come out otherwise. I mean, Robert Gordon's separation agreement was released through open records requests and has led to this, you know, weeks-long debate about whether these type of agreements should continue. And, you know, in the process of that, there have been reporters uncovering numerous other separation agreements through open records requests or other types of requests. So it's a real moment in time where not only is the debate happening in the legislature, but you have this ballot proposal being discussed, and you have real-life examples of how open records requests provide crucial information to the public. So yeah, I think it's fascinating. This is all happening at the same time.
Yeah. And I think that Craig gets some credit for making this subject really interesting at this particular moment. You know, without FOIA, Robert, you might not know about that $155,000 separation agreement. And that's one of the examples of, you know, maybe this isn't a sexy topic on paper. Maybe searching for documents doesn't sound very exciting. But, you know, if you were excited by that story, or if that made you feel some kind of way, that's exactly the kind of thing that comes up because we have FOIA laws.
How much of this, Emily, as we're talking about some Republicans in the Senate not wanting to push for the open records law, but really being angry, right, over these separation agreements, how much of it is really then truly wanting to be angry about Robert Gordon? And how much of it is just a political hammer against Whitmer, something that they've found that they can hold on to?
Well, it's Lansing, so let's not rule out politics generally. But I think it's worth noting that, you know, these Senate Republicans, a lot of them come from the House. A lot of them have supported transparency legislation in the past, far before this was the issue that it is today before them in the Senate, and far before the Robert Gordon agreement. So I do think that there's sort of a goodwill consensus around a lot of this. But, you know, whether that translates into actual Senate action, I think, is probably the sort of political question that you referenced.
And speaking of politics and all things seemingly equal at some point, a progressive advocacy group brought up this issue of separation agreements involving the legislature. In fact, some $700,000 being spent in the legislature on staffers leaving. Craig, can you give us a little bit of a rundown of that and how that kind of fits along with the administration of Gretchen Whitmer using separation agreements as well?
Yeah, in some ways, it undercuts some of the attacks that Republicans have tried to levy against the Democratic governor of late, because the Senate, primarily the state Senate, has been somewhat routinely agreeing to separation deals that appear appear, according to one of them that we've reviewed, to include a confidentiality provision as well. The Senate's been doing this. You know, I think we tracked 20 of them over the past 5 years in the Senate, and Progress Michigan had tracked, I think, about 30 of them over a decade in the Senate. So this is something the Senate's been doing. You know, the lawmakers will say that the type of agreements that they're entering into are much smaller and of a different tone and reason than what the administration has done. But this is where it gets back to FOIA, like everything else. We don't have the actual agreements that the legislature is entering into. We have been pushing to try to get the text of those agreements, but because the legislature doesn't fall under any type of open records law, they don't feel like they have to release those agreements at this time. We believe, and others believe, that, you know, the way the law is written, that maybe the House and Senate Business Office would have to release these documents, but they haven't. So this is, again, getting back to the differing levels of transparency. Robert Gordon's deal had to be released because it was involving the Attorney General's office and the Department of Health, which fall under FOIA. The Senate and House deals don't have to be released because the legislature is exempt.
And Emily, we should note both the $155,000with Robert Gordon, as well as this $700,000 in the state legislature. That's taxpayer money.
Yeah. And I mean, as Craig pointed out, there's that real dichotomy between the exact information that you can access from the Department of Health and Human Services versus the legislature. I mean, those are two very parallel documents that we would like to review from each entity. And because of the way open records laws are structured, we can only review that from DHHS. But yeah, the money that the legislature is spending is just as much yours as the money that MDHHS is spending.
And Craig, finally, you wrote about the Michigan Republican Party just last week and their use of confidentiality agreements, though we should note this is not taxpayer money at stake here. This is not necessarily public, but fill us in on this story from last week.
Yeah, this is more about the philosophical use of these agreements and whether they're actually silencing people's ability to speak out. As your listeners probably remember, there was a huge feud in the Republican Party's chair race, and the former chair, Laura Cox, lost her reelection bid to the new chair, Ron Weiser. And there has been a lot of accusations floating from Laura Cox's camp toward the current leadership of the Republican Party. And in late February, the current leadership of the Republican Party sent Laura Cox an email, a letter, I should say, telling her, you know, you signed a confidentiality agreement, and we may have to take legal action if you keep speaking out about what you're alleging Ron Weiser did. So this letter came less than a week before the Michigan Republican Party just started an all-out attack on Governor Whitmer over allegations that she's using separation agreements with confidentiality clauses to silence people. So it's one of those things where at this moment, there don't appear to be any clean hands in Lansing when it comes to these type of agreements. It's just a matter of degree of how much money is involved and how you feel about these agreements as a whole.
Well, on that cheery note, of the Detroit News, Emily Lawler of MLive, thank you so much. It is a really beautiful, sunshiny day, so I liked all of the talk about opening up sunshine into state government. That's so dorky to say, but true.
Well, thank
Agreed.
You.
Thanks.
And that's the Stateside Pod for today. I'm Zoe Clark. You can find the full Stateside Show at michiganradio.org. Today's show was produced by April Van Buren. Our executive producer is Laura Weber Davis. Our theme music is by 14KT, additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Make it a great rest of your day.